At the server side, we spend a lot of time talking about application development and data storage. One of the things we don't spend a lot of time talking about is the network and various bandwidth issues that organizations can run into when they start writing software and interacting with the Internet of Things and dealing with a lot of traffic over the wire. So we reached out to Sean Bowen and Peter Hughes. Sean's the CEO of Push Technologies. Peter is the lead engineer. And we asked them a simple question. How can organizations minimize their bandwidth problems while at the same time reducing latency issues? Peter?
The biggest avenue for getting improvements in this area is send less data, right? It's essentially latency is a product of how much bandwidth you're consuming. And everything, there's a lot of movement these days towards kind of streaming style applications, be that video or just general data. And so we have everyone kind of consolidating kind of around just spurting large amounts of JSON down the wire to every consumer. And that's just completely writing large amounts of data that they don't necessarily need to send. And, you know, the more data you're putting on the wire, the more bandwidth for each connection. When you're at large scale, that's a hell of a lot of bandwidth. And the more bytes that you're having to send, the greater the latency. So just being more, I suppose, cautious about what you send, understanding what is necessary and what you can avoid sending at any given opportunity is probably the best approach. You know, it's a kind of architectural thing. Like we're very well versed with the notion of architecting the software, but when it comes to communicating between aspects of a system, we're still kind of stuck in the model of just send all the data that you want. We don't tend to think of it as much. What gives a lot of, you know, benefit is having an architecture of data, actually thinking about what the data model is, what needs to be consumed, and what you can avoid.
So another question is, when does an organization know they're about to hit some of these bandwidth or latency issues? We want to kind of tackle these problems before they occur. So maybe, Sean, you can tell us, how does an organization know they're about to hit the wall?
So I was going to say, we have a calculation here, which we swear by, which is whenever you're looking at, you know, your pipe and how much data you got to move, it's the frequency of message times the size of message times the number of concurrent connections. And when you start to do the math, it's amazing how easy you can see that we end up sending far too much data down. And therefore, you can just see where latency is going to come from. So as Peter said, taking a step back and then looking at the data and saying, what do I actually really need to send? And, you know, can I be more intelligent about how I name some of these as well? Because I'm using the same names in JSON because I haven't spent the time to really map out my data model.
Now, we all live in a world of fiber optic cables and high-speed internet to our homes, big data backbones between geographically dispersed data centers, and even 4G networks. Really, is the latency issue something that really needs to be addressed? I mean, isn't this a problem that's simply addressed by throwing more hardware and more network bandwidth at the problem?
The number one answer to that is mobile, right? There's no fiber optics for mobile connections. And what we found is essentially the whole concept of the internet is it's a transport medium where you have no real knowledge or guarantees around its quality, right? It's a very, very different medium compared to traditional enterprise customers. And sure, like, you know, if you're a high frequency trader, then yeah, you can just throw money at getting better network connections. But if you consider just across America, there are so many areas that don't even have like fiber optic of any sort. It's changing gradually, but there will always be places where internet connections just aren't great. And another perfect example is not just, you know, in America, but if you look at sort of third world countries like Africa, where they actually have problems with people laying down cables that are then dug up for the metal to be sold. And it's exactly why Facebook is launching its whole initiative right now to improve internet connections over there. The fact of the matter is, you know, you have global markets these days. You have applications that can be running across any quality of network. And so we need a solution that can actually accommodate and be sympathetic to potentially very high levels of latency or poor performance inherent to the internet.
And I think going back to your IoT question as well earlier, I mean, you're not going to see fiber optics connecting every sensor as well. So there just seems to be a natural play for this kind of technology. And we're finding, you know, because the fiber optics aren't there, we're going over a telco-grade network that, you know, used to be that they used to own the relationship with the customer and they used to be generating revenue out the customer. And now they're supplying all this network. And, you know, over-the-top services are earning the money and having the relationships. So they're finding their networks are getting overloaded. They're not making the money to invest as much in it. And they're trying to force people now to be more intelligent and more efficient about what they build. So it seems, you know, this is kind of what the world's screaming out for, something that, you know, is more efficient, more intelligent, and plays to the weaknesses, unfortunately, that are around us and enables us to have the same kind of experience on a mobile that we used to have sitting at our desk inside our corporate firewall on our dedicated network.
So what would be a good example of an Internet of Things type of device really hitting the wall in terms of network bandwidth and latency?
So a good one we've had recently a number of times, actually, is the connected car. And I don't think it has to be the connected car. It could be any example like this. But in the connected car, we were called in by a number of providers because they've hooked up this car, which has, you know, sensors that are moving small bits of data, but those bits of small bits of data move into a console, so it becomes a bit more regular and a bit more data. And then as they start to ramp up the cars, it becomes even more data, and they're trying to push all this data back into some kind of database. And they're finding it, A, it's sometimes crashing the database because they can't handle the volume, and B, they normally have some kind of application or dashboard sitting off the back of the database. So the latency they were seeing in the service was just, it was untenable. It was like 20 seconds for an update. And, you know, an example they gave us, if someone was locked out their car and they phoned into a service to try and authenticate them and enter the car, it was taking 20 seconds to see their click on their remote control for the car. And then what they did is they just inserted us in between their API and the back-end database, and we just consumed as much data as they threw at us. And we lazy wrote it to the database as quickly as it could keep up, but we made sure that the dashboards and the other applications, instead of hooking into the database, were now hooking into us. So you could see all this information in absolute real time. There was no delay. And we're seeing, you know, quite a lot of trends where there's just too much data or too many endpoints coming in. And what we're really good at is literally handling, like I say, internet scale, whether it's inbound or outbound, of connections, and also just, you know, huge volumes of data. You know, a single diffusion instance, to give you an idea on how much we can move, a single diffusion instance could flood a 10 gig NIC on its own quite easily.
Now, some of the writing that I've actually seen from you talks about REST and alternative to REST-based web services. Now, REST is something that, you know, we're fairly partial to over at the server side, although we're always looking to entertain new ideas and new ways to improve our architecture. What's your take on RESTful web services? When do they work? When don't they work? And what types of alternatives do you see when you're dealing with enterprise applications like the ones that you're working with?
One of the events we did recently in Develop Denver, the guys were up on stage talking about REST and how people generally just use REST for everything, and I'm assuming your developer community would quite a large proportion of it would be RESTful developers. And one of the other things we see that kind of just naturally happens in the market is people think REST does everything. And there's some useful information and some presentations we can probably share, or some videos, which talks about, you know, actually looking at what you're building and working out whether REST is actually the most natural fit, or whether something like our streaming product works. Because, you know, a good example we generally give is in REST, you could say, I want to request all my opportunities in Salesforce, and you'd get all those opportunities back. And if you wanted to see what's changed in the next minute, you'd have to request it again, right? Whereas in messaging, normally you would subscribe to a topic queue and say, I want to subscribe to all the opportunities in Salesforce. And you may not get anything back because a message bus doesn't generally work that way. It doesn't always have a message waiting for you with that information. But in our world, because we have staked, you can subscribe to all the opportunities in Salesforce. And because you've got that application open, if someone then comes in behind the scenes and updates a new opportunity, you would automatically get pushed that. So you would get the history as well as what's currently up to date as time moves on. So like I say, I think it's an area we've been pushing quite heavily in is, you've got all these back-end enterprise systems and MQ products, and people are trying to build, applications on top of them, and they're using REST. And maybe a better solution would be something like this, because it's more in tune to what people are trying to do with it, and it's a lot more lightweight.
Okay. And just to piggyback onto that, from a technical perspective, there's a lot of movement within the industry with things like reactive extensions, from Netflix, which has now been open source and has a lot of large industry backers. You have the success of the AXA pattern, AKA from TypeSafe. These are all essentially streaming patterns that so many companies have kind of been demonstrating over the past couple of years that when it comes to high volume, high frequency data, streaming patterns help not just make it easier to rationalize that as a developer and to consume, but it helps alleviate some of the things that you have to deal with over the internet, like latency. Streaming patterns are a more natural fit for essentially the architectures of the modern internet connected world. So, that's exactly where we fit in, and we think that we kind of provide a very compelling solution.
So what exactly is the history of push technologies, and how did you guys get your start, and what types of problems are you solving today?
So we've been around since 2006, and it was all about how do we move data over the internet. So we may have been a little bit early on our timing, but if you think back to that kind of time, I think smartphones were starting to come out, and Comet and technologies like that were happening. So I think the technology was starting to evolve, even if the markets weren't. And I don't know how much you know about the UK market, but in the UK, I kind of say Americans know how to trade. We know how to gamble. And we've got quite a big betting market over there. And there was a real big opportunity for someone with technology like ours to come along, because there was this change in betting where people were going to want to have a lot of data moved very quickly to large numbers of consumers over the unreliable network that is the internet. And that's exactly what we were building. We were building something that could not only move data over the internet, could move it at scale and move it at speed, making sure everyone had the most optimal experience and performance. And, back in 2006, we started out building a Java platform, which was very much designed to be deployed inside your data center behind your firewall. And, we had some staggering successes with it. We were, enabling companies to reduce their bandwidth by around 99%. We were moving data so quickly in the betting space that people were being enabled to bet on a point in a game of tennis. And if you think how quick you play a point, you need to be pretty fast to be able to move it down and give them time to actually execute on that transaction before the point's played out. So we were delivering, faster speeds than they'd ever seen before. We were doing it in a much more efficient way. And we were doing it on a much more efficient way on the infrastructure as well. We were just, we built something for internet scale. So we were driving down the whole infrastructure costs of most of these organizations as well. And, that's how we kind of built our name. We always knew we had something much bigger than the gaming market. This was anyone building conversational style applications, we could see finding a use case for this kind of technology. And, with how the market's moved, it seems to have played nicely into our kind of play with IoT and mobility becoming so big, and of course big data as well becoming more real time. All of these kind of sectors have kind of crossed over into what we deliver.
So you are of course a commercial vendor. If somebody comes to you, signs on the dotted line, and purchases your product, what exactly are they getting? Is it software they install? Is it a cloud service? Is it an API? Maybe you can actually describe what it is somebody actually gets their hands on when they actually come to you and engage with you.
Like kind of Sean mentioned earlier, we have essentially two versions. We have Diffusion, which is our kind of enterprise on-premise version of the product. And then we have React, which is our, you know, cloud software as a service model. So in the React instance, you would go to Bluemix, provision an instance. You know, we have a free tier and then additional plans that are, you know, priced according to how much data you essentially want to be using. And from then on, we provide a bunch of different client SDKs. So we support languages like Java, .NET, JavaScript, C, and, you know, various mobile platforms. And what we expect customers to do then is to take the application and essentially wherever they may be using some communication medium between a back end and a front end, use our client SDKs on both sides to essentially transmit the data across. So our SDKs allow you to connect to your React or Fusion instance and then add data or subscribe to data. And we make no specific, you know, we don't dictate what side the update you know, come from. It could be either the back end updating and then the front end consuming or the other way around.
So what other competitors, what other products do you end up competing against in this particular area, this particular segment?
There's kind of other products you'd look in this kind of space would either be a streaming type product or they'd be, you know, trying to extend an enterprise messaging kind of solution over the internet. And, you know, the streaming products are very much kind of HTML5 type driven, you know, web sockets. And we kind of looked at both of those and said we didn't feel it worked well for the internet because, you know, messaging was built for the dedicated network, the large pipe, the, you know, the large servers either side. And HTML5 just seemed like a fire hose with no control on it. And we wanted to make sure that we didn't just move data, we actually understood the environment around it and tuned and optimized everything accordingly. So in our world, we kind of work more like video. Yeah, the first message we ever send down to an endpoint is state. It's the, you know, in video terms, it's the first frame of every pixel in it. And then from then on, if we can, we just send the delta. We just send the pixels that change. So that, to us, we thought was a more natural, efficient way of moving data to a mobile device. Because as you think about it, you know, quite often on these devices, you haven't just got data that has to be sent every time. You've got what we call eyeball data that really you only need to send as quickly as you can keep up with it. So we felt that was a more, you know, optimized way of moving data. And that's why we found such great, you know, bandwidth efficiencies as we're sending it down, because if we can break that message apart and understand what's in that message, we can just be a lot more efficient. And we're seeing a, you know, even on the cloud players we go against, we're seeing an 85% reduction in bandwidth against them, just out the box without doing any clever stuff. So the other thing we do, which is very different as well, is we talk about offering internet messaging because we're very much focused on the internet rather than the enterprise. And we believe there is a big renaissance around messaging. And, you know, people understand the principle, so being able to extend that over the internet seamlessly seems like an obvious way to go. But we put something in our product which enables us to do what we call stateful messaging. So there's a cache inside the product. So we don't just move data, we cache it on the edge, and then we move the deltas from there on. And that means when people are coming in and trying to hit the back-end systems, what all they're hitting in our world is our cache version sitting on the edge. So it takes the load off the back-end infrastructure, which obviously, again, helps reduce the amount of infrastructure we put behind and increases the performance from the edge. And, of course, we kind of understand who's connected, what they're looking at, and what they're doing in real time, so we can start to tune the service accordingly. You know, if you lose a connection, we can tell you what you missed while you were away and give you a delta to get up to speed rather than make you reload the whole app. If your device is starting to struggle with the processing of the messaging, we can do things like throttling, conflation, prioritization, all on the server. So it's all about adding a level of intelligence around moving data. And what we've now done with the product recently is we've taken our enterprise-grade product and we've chucked it in the cloud as a software as a service on IBM SoftLayer. And the latency and the efficiency we're seeing against the other players in the market is just, yeah, they're not even in the same ballpark. You know, we did a test recently where we were testing, as we were ramping up the number of messages, we were testing the round trip times from Asia to Washington, which is where we have our infrastructure hosted, and back to Asia. And our round trip time was 222 milliseconds. But the real impressive thing was our average latency across all messages was around 228 milliseconds. So it was such a tight spread. And when we started to look at our competition, they weren't even in the milliseconds. Their average latency for the same benchmark within, as we ramped up over 30 seconds, was hitting 14 seconds. And that's kind of what we do really well. We enable you to increase, whether it's messages or connections, we enable you to just really put this thing under load and guarantee that latency is going to stay as minimal as possible.